You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 53, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harrison, Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. And here we are back in the routine, beginning our second year of podcasting here. Hope you all enjoyed our very special episode last weekend. And once again, if you have any questions or anything to ask David, please feel free to contact the show. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. Hope to get Dave on again sometime and maybe even make fun of Thor comics with him. Anyway, I don't have a whole lot of news. Obviously, the big news over the last couple of weeks has been the release of The Avengers. And as of today, I still have not yet seen it. I do plan on seeing it in the theater, though. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. And I do have a little kind of a road trip thing coming up this next weekend. And it's quite possible that if I have the opportunity, I might actually go see it next weekend or possibly over Memorial Day weekend. I'm not one of those people who generally jumps out the first week that a movie is out to go see it. Though rest assured, when I do see it, I'm certainly going to have a lot to say about it. So anyway, I am looking forward to it, and hopefully I'll get to that sometime in the next couple of weeks. So anyway, that is what's going on. And other than that, God, I really don't have a lot of news for you. We kind of have gotten specialed out, haven't we, with our 50th episode and then our 52nd episode. And of course, next episode, episode number 54, we're going to have a Norse myth. So after that, of course, things will calm down again, at least for the next 9 episodes or so. But without further ado, we will get into the routine here and move on to our reviews.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed. And this week we start off with The Mighty Thor, number 141. Has a cover date of June of 1967, retail for 12 cents. Incidentally, this issue has been reprinted at least a couple of times, first in Marvel Masterworks Thor Volume 6, and again in The Essential Thor Volume 3. Cover art is by Jack Kirby and Vinnie Coletta, and we have a kind of a weird cover here. The cover blurb asks us, who is Replicus? Like we would know that. Stan, we're relying on you to tell us. And we have a picture, close-up, really, of Thor with his face obscured, hurling his hammer towards the viewer, and he's surrounded by the sort of squarish, oblongish TV screen-looking images, one of which shows Thor being headbutted by just this green guy, and we have another one showing Thor being grabbed by the front of his cape, and then we have another one showing Thor being wrapped up in long, stretchy fingers. And that is the cover. We open up to the splash page. We have the Mighty Thor and the Wrath of Replicus, featuring the murderous menace of mob leader Slugger Sykes. And they have the credits, of course. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby are co-credited with this issue, inked by Vinnie Coletta, and lettered, of course, by Art Simic. And on the splash page, we see Thor apparently being punched around by this guy who looks a whole lot like Sergeant Fury of Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos. And, of course, that's not to be confused with the Sergeant Fury as played by Samuel L. Jackson, though we realize that that's not him because there's this sort of typical mad scientist one in the background saying, "More, more, don't stop now, Sykes, don't stop now." So apparently this is Slugger Sykes here, and he's punching what looks like Thor. It's interesting that Thor's not saying anything, and Slugger Sykes is beating Thor all the hell. The mad scientist is saying, he is helpless. He cannot resist you, just as I promised. Again, hit him again and again.
Ever since you came back to the city, my boys have been scared to stay in the rackets. And now I'm going to fix all that. Nobody gets the best of Slugger Sykes. Hey, Chuda, you're a genius. I never thought we'd be able to pull off a caper like this.
I told you, Sykes, this is only the beginning. Aided by my scientific secrets, you can become supreme.
Watch this. I'm going to give him my haymaker.
And he's just really swatting Thor aside, and Thor doesn't seem to be fighting back. And he bashes Thor with a giant batam through a bunch of machinery. He says, I did it. He's done for.
Enough. You've put his mobile circuit out of operation.
Ha, I guess the old slugger can still belt the guy into the middle of next week. Can you fix him up again, Chuda?
Of course. Chuda can do anything.
So obviously this is not the real Thor.
Know something, mister? I got a hunch you and me are gonna get along just fine. What other little surprises have you got up your sleeve, Chuda?
You soon shall see, Sykes, after I get our fallen friend back on his feet. My cybernetic replicas of real beings are far too valuable to be carelessly discarded. Rise, Thor. You can now rise again.
Boy, if only we could handle the real thing as easy as that robot.
Robots? No, my friend. He is far, far more than a mere robot. He is an actual replica. Just as all my creations I construct are replicas. Go, Thor. It is time to join your fellow replicas in the storage chamber.
Wait, what about that one you were telling me about?
Ah, you mean my supreme creation, the most powerful replica of all, the one which I promised would be the greatest weapon with which to give you mastery of all of the underworld, in fact, mastery over all mankind. He is kept in a special place, as you shall see.
And he goes over to, looks like a valve, like a pressure valve, and turns it, and this blue coffin-looking thing slides out of the wall. And we learned that it is a specially constructed cybernetic case. There's a lot of alliteration in this script, I have to say, that makes it actually hard to read. Typical Stan Lee, and just wordy as all hell, in a way that these 60s comics usually aren't. So Chuda, who's the mad scientist, opens up this blue coffin-looking thing, and this big green robot-looking guy sits up out of it, and Judas says,
Replicus, the most powerful thinking automaton ever created, the most invincible weapon of all time.
He looks strong enough to handle a dozen Thors. So what are we waiting for? Let's see what he can do.
And we then cut to Dr. Don Blake, and he's making a house call. And he's going to this apartment of this elderly lady, and he's asking old kid for directions, and he says,
Mrs. Garden? Oh, you must be Granny Gardenia.
Now that's a Jack Kirby name if I ever heard one. Must be Granny Goodness's sister or something.
She's on the next floor, apartment 3B, Doc.
And we see that Blake is thinking to himself, she's not a regular patient of his, but he can never refuse a call for help if he can help it. And he reasons that she must be called Granny Gardenia because she sells flowers on the street corner, which is kind of jumping to conclusions, isn't it? So we next see he's in Granny Gardenia's apartment, and he says, good afternoon, Mrs. Garden. I'm Dr. Blake. And she actually does even look a little bit like Granny Goodness, except she's really little and skinny and frail, where Granny Goodness was like big, burly, muscular woman.
I knew you weren't Lawrence Welk, sonny. Come in. I'm just having meself a wee bit of porridge. And it's a fine lad you are to come and look after a wee old lady. Sure, it's more than me own broth of a boy is after doing.
And, they're kind of chit-chatting, and as they're talking, these two goons kind of come into the room here. They're sort of stereotypical gangster types.
There she is. That's a Sawbones visiting her, so that's why she ain't been around with her flowers lately.
And they come in and say,
hiya, Granny. Slugger asked us to look in on you and see if you're okay. He don't like it when you ain't around to sell him a fresh gardenia every day. Be sure and get the old lady back on her feet, Doc. Them Slugger Sykes orders, see?
And just who is Slugger Sykes?
Hush, laddie. Let Granny do the talking. Slugger is my best customer. I sell the dear boy a gardenia every day. You'll find his flowers right there in the dresser. Old Granny wouldn't let him down, boys.
And Blake is thinking to himself, Slugger Sykes? I've heard that name. Isn't he the big underworld boss?
Aye, 'tis a fine sense of humor you have, Doctor. You better get that pill pusher to button his lip, Granny, if he wants to stay healthy.
It's okay, Blackie. It ain't Granny's fault. She's been sick, ain't she? Just so long as he gets his flower. Hey, this don't smell fresh enough for Slugger. You know how superstitious he is about having a new one from her every day.
And they're kind of threatening the doctor to get Granny better or else they're going to beat him up.
Now remember, little man, take good care of Granny or you'll be hearing from Slugger Sykes. If ever he couldn't buy a gardenia from her every day, he'd get real mad.
We wouldn't want that to happen, would we, chum?
I guess we can take off now. I got a hunch the doc gets the message. You know something, Blackie? This guy's so skinny he could use his sawbones himself. Don't forget to leave me money on the table. I'm not so sick that I remember that, me fine buckles. Now arf with ye, so the darling doctor can make old Granny good as new again.
Yeah, Granny is a real stereotype. Anyway, it says a few minutes later, he's checking her and he's saying, your gardenias must be very important to Slugger Sykes, Mrs. Garden, if he bothers to send those two hoods after them.
Sure, and Mr. Sykes is me very best customer, Doctor. Not a day goes by without him buying one of me flowers. The dear boy calls me his good luck charm.
That dear boy is one of the most dangerous mobsters in the entire nation, Mrs. Garden.
Ah, so long with you. Mr. Sykes would in heart a fly. You don't know the heart of the man, the generosity of him. Just look at the color TV he bought me last Christmas. Turn it on for an old lady, Doctor. I love to watch the wrestling matches.
All right, you're well enough now.
And he doesn't want to talk any more about Slugger Sykes to the old lady. And he can't find any wrestling matches on the TV, but he finds what he thinks is a science fiction program. And it's this green guy who we saw earlier and kind of trashing the joint. Says,
how about a science fiction program like this, Mrs. Garden? It certainly is realistic looking for a monster program.
But it isn't a monster movie, Doctor. It's Channel 4 you'll be tuning in. And this is the hour for the Huntley Brinkley Report. You've got the news, lad.
The news, but how? What on earth can this be? I've got to switch on the sound.
And they're detailing how this creature came down. And you get a little bit of a crossover here. It said the news is showing these startling photos were taken by a part-time photographer named Parker, who happened to be at the window of the Daily Bugle building when the silent monster struck. Apparently propelled by some sophisticated form of liquid fuel, the humanoid creature rebounded from building to building until he was lost to sight in a matter of seconds.
So, not exactly a Spider-Man crossover, but, you know, it's cute that it got a mention. Now, I suppose the bigger question is, why didn't Spider-Man go after Replicus?
We then cut to a scene of the green robot thingy appearing in Slugger Sykes's headquarters, and Dr. Chuda says,
Replicus has returned. He has completed his first test to perfection.
Hey, that robot just flew in through the window. He's charging towards us. Put those guns away, you fools. That's the one I was telling you about. The thing that Chuda is going to sell to us. And he ain't a robot. He's a replica. Ain't you got no brains?
He sure looks like a robot to me.
And the robot, or replica, opens up his chest and a bunch of money spills out onto the desk.
Replicus, do you have the money you were ordered to obtain?
Holy cow, does he? Just look at that. And it don't mean a thing to him.
Wow, it looks like Granny's gardenias are still bringing you luck, huh, boss? Yeah, that looks like the biggest haul you made so far this year, Slugger. Them gardenias must be getting luckier than ever.
Yeah, my luck's holding out, but yours sure ain't.
Huh? What do you mean?
I mean you're both through. You're washed up, finished. I'm kissing you off. Now that I've got Replicus, who needs a couple of slobs like you hanging around? Oh, no, you don't. You can't get rid of us that easy. No one's going to push us around, see?
I love this dialogue. This is great.
It's like every cheesy gangster movie rolled into one comic book.
Now you are displaying new wisdom, Sykes.
So, you think I can't push you around, huh? Replicus!
And Replicus picks up the two goons and is holding them over his head.
I await orders.
Hey, Lego, put us down.
He's lifting us up like we don't weigh nothing. Okay, you win. We quit. We're cutting out.
Enough, Replicus. Now simply toss them out.
And we then get a montage of the various crimes that Replicus is committing. We see him, it looks like he's stealing a crown and a scepter. It says, the Daily Bugle headline, Metal Monster Steals Crown Jewels on Display at Museum. And next panel, we see him bursting through a vault door. It says, Metal Monster Steals Fortune and Bonds from Burglar Proof Bank Vault. And the next shows the cops chasing after him with a bunch of flamethrowers and says, Metal Monster cannot be stopped by any weapon known to modern man. City in crisis.
And we see Dr. Blake sitting in his office reading the paper, and the headline on there says, Metal Monster Strikes at New Target, Steals Fortune in Bonds, Monster Can Speak, Witness Reports It Calls Itself Replicus. And he's saying, the Metal Menace has a name. An eyewitness claims to have heard it say, Nothing can stop Replicus. Replicus. That's a strangely grim and savage sound to that name. So far, no one has been able to learn who or what he is or where he comes from. But if someone doesn't stop him, he'll make a shambles of the city, because there are no other superheroes in New York City other than Thor. It seems the time has come for Dr. Blake to abandon his medicine for a while. And he bangs his staff on the ground, and he changes into Thor. And he takes off out the window of his office. It's amazing. We actually saw Don Blake doing medicine this issue, which is more than we've seen in ages. And he goes flying off, looking for the robot. He says, whatever the danger, whatever the risk, the hammer of Thor shall strike for justice. The leather thong which I do grasp begins to tingle. Oh, I bet it does. Thus I now draw near the one I seek. And another rooftop nearby, we see Replicus, and he says, my built-in sensors tell me an enemy draws near. With one mere grasp of my forged steel fingers, I will seize a portion of the solid brick ledge, and then Replicus will strike, and he smashes the ledge with a crunch, and he picks up these bricks and hurls them at Thor, and what is this? A heavy section of brick cornice, hurled upward with the force and fury of a meteor. Of course, meteors go down usually, don't they? Let the battle then begin. Thor has found the one he seeks. And we see Thor clocking the Replicus with his head, with a big brock. And then with a big spatang, he bashes him with his hammer. Says, robber, murderer, and worse, be gone. Now, they didn't actually show that he murdered anyone. But Thor just likes to call people names. There is no place on earth for the likes of thee. Let the hammer of Thor drive thee from the sight of men, thou base and bloodless mockery of all who live. Well, that's not very nice. He's throwing his hammer around, but Replicus is bouncing around like Bouncing Boy or something. He's just dodging the hammer. I guess here Thor has forgotten that he can actually use his hammer as a guided missile, but, you know, now Jack Kirby can't keep its power straight. Anyway, so I say, by the glistening spires of Asgard, though he be made of lifeless metal, he doth think and act with the skill of a warrior born. He hath eluded my hammer, but now he doth stop. He turns, he studies me with fearless demeanor. He hath done with fleeing. The challenge is clear. And as Odin be my judge, the challenge shall be met. And the two of them go hand to hand, and he said, have at thee, thing of evil, for honor, for Asgard, for justice. I have never witnessed such strength. Still you are but flesh and blood, while I am far more. More, I am Replicus. And we see one of the images that we saw on the cover of the green guy headbutting Thor in the stomach. And then the next panel is actually one of the other TV images from the cover. It's him being grabbed by Replicus's hands by the front of his cape. Though I was fashioned in human form, my power cannot be expressed in human terms. You could just say strong. His words are true. He holds me without effort, with inhuman ease. So much naked strength doth he employ that even now his fingers start to glow, to smolder like burning coals. And Thor is starting to smolder a little bit because of this. And Thor uses a judo throw to throw Replicus over his head and into a building with a giant splang. And Replicus is kind of falling through a door or window, looks like. I am programmed to achieve naught but victory. I cannot be wearied. I cannot be injured. I can only triumph. Now my sensors tell me there can be no triumph unless Thor dies. And like a laser beam shoots out of his head with a giant fatask, but Thor is able to deflect the laser beam with his hammer, and Replicus comes bursting out of the building with a crash, and his fingers stretch out. Again, this is one of the images that we saw on the cover, and he has these like rubbery retractable fingers, and they're wrapping up Thor. And now feel the crushing power of my matchless retractable grip fingers, fingers which can perform any task. Fingers whose invincible cobalt cables can be shattered by no force in all the universe. This is the second issue in a row where they've mentioned cobalt. This must have been really big in the mid-60s. Each cable as tight and unyielding as the grip of Hercules. Now, how would he know that? He doesn't know Hercules. No matter, Thor shall prevail. What, you still resist? You still match your own living strength against that of my cobalt cables? You force me to do what never has been done before. I must increase the flow of cobalt power no matter what the cost. And there's a bunch of cops there and some TV people. They're filming what's going on here. And they have a reporter says, bringing you a special telecast directly from the site of combat. We have just learned that the police are preparing to move in and take direct action if Thor should fall. Look over there. Look what they're preparing to use. And it's like this giant
ultra futuristic bazooka thing. And there's these guys, they're all dressed up in armor, like look like a cross between Iron Man's armor and like Cyclops from the X-Men. They actually look a little bit like the Cylons from the original Battlestar Galactica, though this predates that by like 11 years.
Get those recoilless rifles loaded with shock shells and do it fast. Doesn't look as if Thor can hold out much longer. When you fire, be sure it's point-blank range. You can't afford to miss. Then I have to take off. These armored suits won't help you much if Replicus gets a hold of you.
We're all set, but it looks like there's still plenty of fight left in Thor.
And we see back in Chuda's headquarters, they see Slugger Sykes and Chuda watching the battle on a cosmic voyeuroscope of sorts. And it says the robot managed to seize Thor's hammer away from him, and they said,
"They say no human can ever lift that hammer, but Replicus has the edge over any human. Just look at him."
"I seen enough. I'm sold on that hunk of tin. I'll buy him. Name your price, Chuda. He's got to be mine."
"My price will be reasonable on one condition. You must help me sell similar models to other mob leaders throughout the nation. Is it agreed?"
"Huh? You mean you want to sell other ones?
I don't get it. Why do you want to do that? I can pay you enough just for Replicus to make you rich." "Your money alone does not interest me. I have other aims, a far more important objective to achieve. When I am done, this entire city, this entire land will be overcome by chaos and fear."
"I don't like the sound of that, mister."
"It does not matter to me what you like. You are no more than a pawn in my far-reaching master plan."
"You punk! I thought I smelled a rat. You're not going to make a fast, crooked buck like I am. You're playing for different stakes. You're just a rotten, low-down spy. Maybe I ain't no flag-waving patriot, and no one's going to pin any medals for good citizenship on me either. But I'll tell you one thing. No crummy, two-faced enemy agent is going to make a patsy out of Slugger Sykes."
"You brainless, babbling fool. You think me a spy from some other worthless nation on this primitive planet of yours? And you think any power on Earth could have created the majesty of Replicus? Those who sent me here are far greater, far wiser, far superior to any mere Earthling."
"Hey, what's that you're reaching for? Some kind of nutty-looking gun. You ain't using that against me."
And Chuda takes the gun out and he smashes Slugger Sykes with this weapon. I mean, he just blasts him with it and he goes fine and his clothes are all ripped up.
"On the contrary, you chauvinistic savage. That's just what I am about to do. One blast of the supersonic stun gun will reduce you to abject helplessness. The same condition to which your entire planet will shortly be reduced. Once I contact my superiors to inform them of my success, nothing will be able to save the human race from ultimate conquest. Picture mankind at the mercy of 1,000 exactly like Replicus. But you, alas, will not be here to see our final victory." And
Slugger's laying there. Looks pretty helpless.
"Maybe not, you creep, but I'm going to fix you so you won't be either."
And
"Look out, you're forcing me towards the power pile. It is still activated. Now, ain't that a shame?"
He tackles Chuda into this power pile thing, and the two of them fall into it, and it explodes with a giant batoom. And at that instant, the Replicus robot collapses. Thor says,
"Replicus slumps to the ground. Lifeless, powerless, and yet I have still to hurl my most potent blow."
"I don't get it. He crumbled like a pile of tin cans that someone suddenly dropped."
"Look how limp he is. He's like an electric motor after the plug was pulled out."
"Yeah, just like that.
Just most passing strange. He who never truly lived has tasted the bitter draught of death. The charade is now ended. He who once was Replicus shall never menace mankind again."
"We'll take him to the lab, boys. We'll try and figure out what made him tick.
I suspect they will find a greater mystery than men can now unravel."
"Maybe so, but we'll sure give it a try."
And we then cut back to Granny Garden's apartment. And Dr. Don Blake is making a house call and says,
"I'm glad to see you're looking stronger, Mrs. Garden. And I hope you're feeling better. Mrs. Garden, do you hear me?"
"Granny hears you, Doctor. I don't feel much like talking."
"Oh, you must have read of the death of Slugger Sykes. They say he was found with a smile on his face, as though he met his end with contentment."
"I hope so, Doctor. I've got a feeling in my heart that you're right."
"He was more than just a customer to you, wasn't he?" "No, don't answer that. Just listen to what I have to say. Yeah, I don't really want to think about it either." "Fate moves in mysterious ways, and in the case of Slugger Sykes, something tells me that, and when the end came, he proved there can be more good in a man than anyone suspects. I hope his mother will remember that always.
That's her what you're saying, Dr. Blake. I am not his mother. I am his girlfriend.
No. Okay. So, that is the main story there. So, very unusual, actually, for the last few issues that we've had of these 1967 stories. And it's one of the things about the story that makes it different is how wordy it is. This is just word panels crammed into every panel. So Stan Lee must have been getting paid by the word, is all I can say. And this is definitely, most of this is not Jack Kirby dialogue. There's no way in hell that Jack Kirby scripted this. Definitely with all the alliteration and maybe a little bit of the Mort Weisinger-esque explanations that a lot of these things going on in this issue. I would definitely say this is a Stan Lee scripting job. Now, what can I say about the plot? Well, it's basically the plot of a whole bunch of gangster films and TV episodes. In fact, I've seen this somewhere before, almost verbatim. It didn't have Thor in it, didn't have a robot, but there was this idea of the gangster redeeming himself in death. And we even had a Thor story before, where we had a similar situation with a gangster who decided that the villain that he was allied with was too evil and he had to turn against him. So we've seen that before, even in the Thor series. Don't remember offhand what issue it was, but it was a while ago, probably back in the Journey into Mystery days. But this whole idea of, you know, the old woman turning out to be the gangster's mother, well, that's like every old gangster movie ever written, pretty much. And I even remember like an old Gomer Pyle episode where they had almost exactly the same situation, though I think it was the gangster's father. But anyway, yeah, it just seems like this is kind of one cliche after another as far as the gangster stuff goes. Next issue blurb is promising us a surprise guest star. So pretty cool there. So yeah, artwork, generally speaking, it's a little bit rough in this issue. It's not bad, but Vinnie Coletta is trying something a little bit different with the inks this time around, and I'm not really sure that I like it. It's really kind of this chicken scratching, very loose inking, and I'm not real crazy about it. It also looks as though the Kirby was rushed on the art this time. There's a lot of panels that seem really, really clunky, and maybe the anatomy is not really good. I think the kind of the highlights for me are the fight between Chuda and Slugger Sykes. I think that's a pretty nice page there, where they fall into the pile. And the only place where Slugger Sykes looks like Nick Fury is on the splash page. I don't know what he was thinking, because the whole rest of the issue, he looks exactly like Edward G. Robinson. So I don't know what Kirby was thinking there, but it's a little bit inconsistent. All right, so we have a 5-page Tales of Asgard backup, and as promised last time, we have the title of the story, Alibar and the 40 Demons. And as you recall, we left Thor and the Warriors 3, Hogun, Fandral, and Volstagg in the city of the evil mogul, and they're looking for him. And Kirby has done a lot of research in this issue. You can see it because a lot of the costumes and things that people are wearing, he has these Thai traditional costumes with the big, like, spiky hats, and he's got like Middle Eastern looking costumes. And, you know, some of the things look like they were probably just copied from whatever Sinbad movie was popular in 1967. But some of the things look as though he actually spent some time doing photo research from National Geographic or something. Of course, all of it incongruous to the fact that you've got this character Mogul, who is basically like this Middle Eastern sort of thing. And you've got all these very Asian elements coming in into the art here. And a lot of very detailed stuff in the artwork in this 5-page backup, which is interesting because of the previous one, the previous story in this issue, which is a little bit sparse. So anyway, we have the Warriors 3 and Thor, and they're coming down the stairway, and he's saying, "'Tis truly Xanadu. We've reached our goal at last. Look, see how the masses tremble at the sight of valiant Volstagg. Lead on, noble Hogan. Flashing blade of Fandral is ever at thy side."
Warriors of Asgard within the hidden realm, verily we are undone.
Show thyself, Mogul, thou prince of infamy. Hogan has come to erase thee from the memory of man.
And we have the credits here, Stanley and Jack Kirby, with Vinnie Coletta inking and Art Semek on letters. And this room that they're in is really elaborate and really detailed and photo-referenced and looks pretty awesome, actually. Every panel of this is really full of detail, and obviously Jack Kirby spent a lot of time drawing this, and maybe that's why the lead story is so sparse. And the three of them are kind of wandering through, and we have like slaves carrying a palanquin, and there's these really like Asiatic-looking patterns and fountains, and Fandral says, "The peasantry flee before us. Is this a sample of Mogul's might? Patience, dashing one. Be thou ever on guard. Methinks the Lord of Villainy will strike when we do least expect it. Never shall Mogul find Hogan off guard. My mace doth fairly cry out for vengeance.
One so evil as Mogul is bound to be crafty as well. What if he doth hide from us in some most unlikely place? And what place of concealment could be more unlikely than a litter chair? My duty is clear," and Volstagg goes off to find out who's in the palanquin. "Heedless of the dangers as ever, I must follow yon contrivance, no matter where the path of peril may lead, no matter that a beauteous damsel may be seated within. Such frivolous facts are beneath the very notice of dauntless Volstagg."
And Volstagg goes chasing off after the litter chair, and the rest of them run into a big group of guards. And the guards are dressed in sort of Mongol or perhaps Byzantine costume, and they're carrying scimitars. And Thor says,
"A corps of sword-wielding elite guards. To arms, Asgardians. No matter the odds, here we do stand. Let there be no retreat as long as breath endures. How about thee, villains, one and all? The blade of Fandral shows no favor.
Back, ye sons of evil, back. Not all the legions assembled shall keep me from my prey."
And they're fighting against these guards, and the guards all of a sudden become really colorful and really detailed. of course, we'll never see any of these armors again. And Thor is saying, "Thou shalt find the one thou seekest, Hogan. The enchanted hammer of Thor shall bludgeon a path for thee, both straight and ever true.
Nothing shall keep me from him who ravaged my land, him who enslaved my people."
That's bad grammar, Stan.
"Fie upon ye all, you brazen bumbling knaves, to waste the dazzling steel of Fandral upon oafs such as thee is like pitting the might of Odin himself against that of a quaking rabbit. And all, well, it could be a very dangerous rabbit. In all this accursed realm, there is not a master swordsman amongst these? If so, bring him forth, that Fandral may toy with the foe who is worth his metal."
We then cut to another part of the castle, where Mogul is sitting on a really, really elaborate throne, which we will never see again. And he's saying,
"So, Alibar, the thief, dared invade my royal kitchen to steal food from the poor. Then put him to death. No, stay thy hand. There is a better use to make of him."
And Mogul realizes that the Warriors Three and Thor are drawing closer to his palace, and he's holding the battle standard of Hogan's people, and it says, "Thousands perish that I might possess the standard, thousands of Hogan's countrymen who chose death in place of surrender, and now the life of Mogul too is threatened, but I have conceived a plan more doubly than any ever before.
Prisoner, perhaps I did judge thee too hastily. Thou merely didst what thou thought was right. Therefore rise, Alibar. In my infinite mercy, I do grant thee pardon. Thou art a free man once again." "But why, Prince of Darkness? Tyrant thou hast ever been. Never have I seen a leopard which could change its spots."
"Silence! I shall prove how generous thy monarch can be. With the powers of enchantment which are mine to command, I garb thee now in princely raiment."
And he waves his hand, and Alibar is dressed in this, like, it really looks like samurai armor, though it's not really samurai armor. It's just kind of fanciful white armor, very, very elaborate. And he's got definitely a samurai sword here with a really fancy hilt on it.
"I do not comprehend. Thou hast transformed a penniless thief into a royal gladiator. Perhaps 'tis merely a kingly whim, but it matters not. What does matter is that a gallant warrior must be astride a proud battle steed, and so shall it be."
And he summons up a white horse with full barding on up right underneath him, and says,
"Thy wizardry is beyond belief, but still for thy purpose I search in vain." "My purpose is simple. I have respect for thy courage, and it doth please me to reward thee for the concern thou hast shown for the poor amongst my subjects. Therefore I call thee knight, and thou art commissioned to battle the enemies of the realm." "Methinks I do begin to perceive the truth. Thou wouldst make of me a cat's paw, a sacrifice chosen to fight, mayhap to die in place of thee. Think what thou wilt. I have given thee thy freedom, made of thee a nobleman.
Now there is no turning back. Take then this battle standard. Thou must guard it even unto death. Let none who live wrest it from thy hand. Now on into battle with thee. Thou wert born a swine, but thou shalt die a prince. And I give thee an army to lead, an army such as thou have never faced before. By the demons of darkness, by the fury of a thousand winds, by the witchery of the endless night, let Satan's 40 horsemen thunder forth.
And now they're really mixing mythologies now. Satan's 40 horsemen. And he summons up these really kind of creepy looking gray monster horse things. And they really have sharp teeth and they look like they're made of stone and, you know, kind of blue and gray. And on their back, there's these very Asian looking like armored guys. And
we, the ever deathless ones, cry, death to the Asgardians, Mogul shall be triumphant. All who live must fall beneath our hooves.
Alibar is leading them into battle with the Hogan's people standard there in his hand, thinking to himself,
I thought myself transformed into a warrior prince, but still I am slave. I do not lead these who follow behind me. I merely ride into the holocaust, for there is no stopping Satan's horseman 40. In his final act of desperation, Mogul has doomed all those who live. To be continued.
And that is Thor 141 from July of 1967. Yeah, once again, the five-page backup, very elaborate art. Once again, Scoletta was also dealing with this new inking style on this story, and it really, to me, does not work well. It looks to me like after the first couple of pages, he went in and erased all of the backgrounds. And it's really unusual for Kirby to have no backgrounds at all. But we do have a couple of pages here in this issue where there literally are no backgrounds at all. But we also have a couple of pages where there's a really elaborate background. So I don't know. I mean, maybe Kirby got tired of drawing backgrounds. Maybe Coletta erased them. Really not sure what to make of that. But anyway, yeah, so pretty good story. Again, you know, the five-page Tales of Asgard seem to be even better paced in a lot of ways than the main story. So that's it for Thor 141. Now let's leap ahead 18 years and go back to the Simonson era as we look at Thor number 361 from November of 1985, retailed for 65 cents. Cover art is by Walt Simonson and features Thor, and he's in his chariot drawn by his two goats, Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder, and he's whirling his hammer around above his head. And in the foreground, there's a giant pink wolf. Who's afraid of the big pink wolf? The big pink wolf. Oh, sorry. Well, maybe not pink. It's like pink and magenta, and it really doesn't look like the colors that a wolf should be, to be quite honest. And he's chained up. This giant pink wolf is chained up, and he's wearing a very spiky collar. But we do open up to the splash page, and we see that the wolf inside the book is not big and pink. It is big and brown with these giant glowing yellow eyes. And we have the credits of the story. Walt Simonson did the art and story. John Workman Jr. is the letterer. Christy Max Shield did the colors. Ralph Macchio was the editor, and Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief. And we have the title of the story, The Quick and the Dead. And Thor is approaching the wolf, though he's not really getting ready to fight him the way it shows on the cover. And he's approaching the wolf, says, Holgarm, fiercest of hounds, the son of Odin greets thee.
Hail, mighty Thor. Hela, my mistress, warned me that you might wish to use the Hellway. Would you seek the kingdom of the dead as a living man? Beware, those who enter here do not come out again.
The blood of Thor shall not easily strain your breast, Garm, like the blood of so many others who sought to leave Hela's realm. With your permission, we would enter her domain. I shall make the arrangements for our departure.
I am called the Doom of Tyr, mighty Thor. Perhaps someday I shall be called the Doom of Thor as well.
Right, now this, of course, is an allusion to Norse myth, and Walt Simonson is making the connection here between Gorm, the hellhound or wolf that guards the entrance of hell, and he is supposed to slay the war god Tyr at the Battle of Ragnarok.
You and your companions may enter freely and of your own free will.
Hurricane, order the warriors and follow me into the Cave of Darkness. We see Hurricane there and the Executioner and a bunch of generic Asgardian warriors. Executioner, bring up the rear and guard it well. And the wolf is talking to them. Farewell, you Einherjar, bold heroes of Valhalla. Pray that Garm never again sees thy faces in the light. And they all kind of file past Garm into the Cave of Darkness, which looks like a big toothy mouth. And the executioner is thinking to himself, the road to hell, mighty Thor, may be paved with good intentions, but the darkness of the hellway is hardly a match for the blackness in my heart. Cast off by the enchantress for Heimdall, I seek solace in battle. For if I cannot be a lover, then I will be a warrior. And you yourself may have lost the beautiful Sif forever. Do you seek only to rescue the lost souls of the mortals that Hela has stolen from Earth? Or do you too ride into hell, cursing the faithless arms of a woman? And Thor's leading the way, and he's seeing that the people are saying that the darkness is so complete, no torch will shine here. Are those stars above us? And yeah, they're in the hallway, so they don't know where the light is coming from. But Thor uses his hammer to light up the cavern, and you can see that the lightning. They're still in the cavern, and apparently there's something on the ceiling that's glowing. And they kind of file through the cave here. And finally, at last, they see light at the end of the tunnel, literally. And Baldur says, Thor, I see it, Baldur. Gjallarbrew sounds, I've had that. It's really good. It's a soda from Scotland. That's Iron Brew. Never mind. And they come to the Gjallarbrew. The Gjallarbrew is this giant covered bridge that crosses the river Gjall that marks the boundary of Hel. And so they're approaching this bridge, and they come across to the bridge, and there's a guardian waiting, and this is Modgud, and she doesn't say anything. She's dressed in green, so you know she's evil, and she doesn't say anything, and she kind of gestures to the bridge to let the warriors know that it's okay for them to go over the bridge, and there's a sound effect of clop, 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 clop. All the horses are crossing over the bridge, and Baldur and Thor are chatting here. Baldur says, I have passed word to the Einherjar to keep their weapons at the ready, for we are nearly there, and Hela doubtless awaits us.
I see the light beyond the bridge, but I do not recognize the country.
And they come out into the other side of the bridge, and it's a beautiful, beautiful vista of trees and clouds and beautiful landscape. And Thor says, Baldur, where are we? Surely this land of enchantment cannot be hell. And everyone files through, and at the end is the executioner, and he's saying, I do not like this place. The whole world sings of peace and harmony. Arg, this is no place for a fighting man. Maybe I should not have come here. And then he hears a voice. But then, Scourge, you would not have found me again. And, huh? The Enchantress, what are you doing in this place? And the Enchantress is standing before him. And, hush, Scourge, and hold me. Kiss me as though you'll never let me go. And he's kind of doesn't really believe that this is Amora. And she tells him that, yes, Scourge, it is the land of the dead, and I belong here now. For jealous Heimdall slew me when he found out that I would remain true to you. And the executioner is really upset about this. What? By the gods, she shall pay for this. No, Scourge, leave him be, for I do not wish ever to be parted from you again. Let the Asgardians go. Stay with me here and never leave me.
Thor?
He is the god of thunder and needs no help from anyone. But I need you now more than ever. And the two of them wander off. And Baldur's thinking something's awfully weird about this vista here. He says, I'm baffled, Thor. This does not look at all like the place where I found Hela and the Warriors of Death.
Surely she must know that we are here.
And one of the warriors says, look out, someone's coming out of the mists. I can't quite see them clearly. Ready your weapons. And there are people emerging from the mists. And Heimdall's like, wait, hold your fire. And one of the warriors says, it's my son who died in the burning of Njal.
And there's my wife. This is truly the realm of the dead.
And all the loved ones of the warriors come and greet them. And everyone's hugging. And there's great rejoicing. Yay. We then cut back to Asgard. And Frigga and Sif are wandering around the streets. And it looks like they're rebuilding the city pretty well at this point. There's a lot of buildings around and stuff. And Sif is saying, the building of the Golden Realm continues apace, Frigga.
Someday the destruction wrought by Surtur will be only a memory, Sif.
How can you, of all people, say that time will heal our wounds? You who have lost Odin.
His loss, Sif, was worth the price, for the nine worlds still endure, and that was ever Odin's first concern. When Thor returns, he shall hold the Althing, and a new ruler will be chosen in Asgard. The order will continue. I have only memories to console me, and the nights will be long. Yet I would not belittle Odin's sacrifice by wishing him back. I was his wife. Now I am his widow. I am content. Could I be bitter?
Forgive my rash words, Frigga. We are a proud race, and Thor and I perhaps most of all. Who would have thought that such pride could be humbled by a single blow? I return to Asgard, Frigga, full of hope and full of life, and all seems turned to ashes behind me. I long to be gone. When the All-Thing is done and the new ruler crowned, I shall leave the Golden Realm again, perhaps forever.
Meanwhile, back in Hel, we see Baldur and Thor. They're standing there and chatting about the, you know, the warriors are kind of wandering off with their loved ones into the mists. And Thor's a little bit alarmed by that. He tells Baldur to call them all back until they can decide what to do. And Baldur hears a voice, and it says,
"Do you not think, dear Baldur, that Hela can wait? After all, it was she who has permitted us to be reunited with our loved ones."
And Baldur turns around and sees this woman standing there, and she's wearing blue and gold and kind of lavender clothes. And
"Baldur, my beloved, have you so soon forgotten me? I am she who gave her life for yours."
No.
"To see you again is to see the sun shining in Hel, as it has not done since the beginning of time. Touch me, am I not real? How have I waited this moment? Come, walk with me a little. I shall not keep thee long from thy duty."
And Baldur wanders off with her, and Thor is almost left alone here, and he hears a voice from behind him.
"Let them go, mighty Thor, for their hearts have much to say to one another, as have ours."
And he turns around, and Sif is standing there, which seems a little bit odd, because we just saw Sif a couple pages ago.
"Sif, surely you are not..."
"Nay, Thor, I am not dead, but I could not let matters rest between us as they were, and rode after you into the lower depth. I have come to ask your forgiveness for treating you so badly, and what better place to find you than in this happy land of reconciliation and love? I am ready to do thy every bidding."
And Thor doesn't quite believe this here, and he says,
"Indeed, m'lady, I think you may be just the one I've been looking for. For though Lady Sif and I have had our differences, those words are not those of the proud shield maiden of Asgard. And Thor kills a tree."
Oh, I wonder if Hel is where all the dead trees go after Thor kills them. Because, anyway, this one gets killed again by Thor. I think this is the first Simonson tree that we've seen killed, is it? It's one of the few, anyway.
"Never would she love me in such a fashion, nor would I wish her to."
"Thor, what are you doing?" And he hits her with the tree, and there's a sound effect, and giant fizz, and he sees that Hela is standing there, and he sees that Hela is standing there. Good God, what the... And he sees that the form of Sif has changed, and standing in her place is the goddess of death, Hela. And she says,
"Welcome, Thor, to Hel. I had hoped to favor the son of Odin with a warm embrace of welcome."
"Then let me return the favor with a gift from the god of thunder." And he's whirling his hammer around. And says, "Mjolnir, my mystic hammer, speak with the tongue of storms." And he's whirling it around, and there's thunder going off and lightning coming around. He's doing sort of this Ajax White tornado thing almost that we've seen him do in the past. And as he's whirling his hammer around, it's revealing the actual terrain around them, and it's not this pleasant land that they've been looking at, and they see these horrible dragon serpent things kind of crawling around and reveal the face of the land through which we walk, for these are truly the depths of Hel. Baldur, beware, the cliffs of death lie at thy very feet.
And we see that some of the Asgardians are being pushed off the cliffs by their loved ones, and Baldur's like, "What?" And Nanna, or whoever is claiming to be Nanna, is trying to push him off the edge. But Baldur kind of does this backflip thing and lands behind her and grabs Nanna around the neck and says,
"I'll not let you go until you have told me why you tried to kill me."
Is it not obvious? Because you are still alive. I killed myself because I was tired of living, Baldur. I never loved you, and now I am dead, and I have tried my best to make you the same.
And Hela says, "Enough, Nanna. The secrets of Hel belong to the dead, not the living."
"We do not wish to know your secrets, Hela, for every man learns them in time. We have come for the mortal souls you stole from Midgard, the souls of men and women who did not deserve the fate you have chosen from them."
"And how do you propose to take them?"
"By challenge. In the past you have sought to ensnare the soul of Thor. Wrestle me for the souls of the mortals. If I win, they go with us to the land of the living.
And if you lose, your soul will be mine forever. A fair wager, mighty Thor. But why would I agree to fight when you already stand within my kingdom where the power is mine?"
"Vanity. There is not one warrior in Hel I cannot defeat. Only Hela herself might withstand the strength of Thor.
and if you do not test me, you shall never know.
I accept. Let us wrestle, Thor, if only to show what you have apparently forgotten. Will you grapple with one whose very touch means aging and death?
And we see, as this conversation is happening, Thor is putting on extra clothing. He's putting on his iron gauntlets, which we talked about, actually, a couple of episodes ago, back in episode number 50. And he has his cape, rips his cape, and makes like a face mask for himself to protect his face against Hela. And she says,
"Ingenious. And will you also grow wings and fly? For Hela is no earthbound goddess." And she kind of flies up.
"And though you may be the god of stormy skies, you are as earthbound as a..." And he leaps at her and is trying to tangle her up in what's left of his cape.
"As the hunter, Hela, who binds the pinions of the birds with his nets and brings them to earth." And they crash down to the earth, and Thor is on top of Hela. But she kind of flips Thor over and grabs at his face. But, of course, he has this cape over his face, so she can't age him. And the two of them are going at it, and it's kind of slugfest. It's not very often that we see Thor fighting against a woman. And this is one of the very few times so far that we've actually seen that. And Thor's fighting her and punching her, and it seems to be pretty evenly matched. And the Asgardians notice that their loved ones are vanishing into the mist, and it's because Hela doesn't have any use for them anymore. They've been alerted to the dead people trying to lure them to their deaths. And Baldur orders that Hurricane and the Iron Hurjar get ready as they watch the fight between Hela and Thor. Meanwhile, we cut back to Asgard, and we see the Asgardians have returned home, and we find ourselves at the home of Volstagg, and one of Volstagg's other children is going up to Hildi and says,
"Hey, Hildi, how come you aren't playing?"
"I don't feel like it. I'm waiting for Dad to come home. He ought to be here any minute, Mom said."
"Can't fool me. You're waiting for Hogan. Hildi's got a crush on Hogan the Grim."
"You take that back, Rolf.
Hildi's got a boyfriend. Hildi's got a boyfriend."
And she goes, pow, and belts him one, knocks him down. At that moment, one of the other kids says,
"Hey, look, it's Father, and he's bringing home company.
Does he have any presents for us?"
And Volstagg is coming up to the house, says,
"Hello, the house. Where are the stalwart guardians of Asgard who protected the realm eternal in our absence? Where are the children of Volstagg the Enormous?"
"Father! Daddy!"
They all come running, and there's not 18 of them, but there sure are a lot of them. And he's like,
"Come, little ones, gather round that I may see thy smiling faces once again. Too long have we tarried in Midgard."
"Well met, my puppets."
"Hi, Fandral."
Volstagg has the one fat kid who looks just like him.
"Where are our presents?"
And Volstagg pulls a Empire State Building statue out of his sleeve and says,
"Why, what is this? Look what I have found within my glove, Gudrun. Let us see what else may lie in my gloves or beneath my tunic."
And the kids are all lined up to get their gifts. And Hildi is standing there at the back of the line looking very forlorn. And all of a sudden we see a very tall figure standing behind her. And we hear the voice of Hogan the Grim.
"Well met, Hildi.
I have brought you a present from a child of Midgard." And he hands her a baseball hat. Now, think back to Power Pack 15 that we covered 2 episodes ago. And remember where this baseball cap came from. Came from Katie of the Power Pack. So this is where that pays off. Remember I said that was going to pay off?
"I have brought you a present from a child of Midgard. It will suit you, I think."
And he puts it on her, and she's like, "Oh, Hogan," and gives him a big hug. And we then cut back to Hel, where Thor and Hela are still fighting, and Hela has managed to get free of Thor's grip, and she tries to float away, but Thor grabs her leg and throws her down to the ground. And the two of them are facing off against each other, and she says,
"You are right, Thor. There is no warrior in all of Hel who could best you. Never has death been so near defeat. But Hela is no ordinary warrior. Mine are not a warrior's weapons. You force me to do what even I cannot undo. And see the hand of glory." And her hand is glowing, and she claws Thor's face and slashes Thor's face, which rips the cape on his face. And Thor goes, "Garg!" And he's got "My face!"
"I had hoped to win you unmarred, Thor, but you are too fierce a fighter even for Hela. Now feel the unbreakable grip of old age and despair."
And she grabs him around the neck, and you hear like a burning noise, as fizz. And she says,
"As you said, Thor, the next one who stood would be the victor." And she's standing over him.
And he's thinking, my face, the agony is beyond belief. And he's covering his face with his hands. So obviously, she's really kind of messed up his face by touching it. Because I feel as though my jaw has been torn away. My limbs tremble with the ague of time. In moments, I shall crumble to dust.
I am pleased, Thor. No whimpering for mercy, no begging for pity. I may not have the father, but the son is mine. Kiss the hem of my cape, Thor, and I may grant you the privilege of being my servant, the slave of my every whim, body and soul. And Thor goes,
never, for I have been the slave of another, and hurt the one I love bitterly. And he rips her cloak right off of her, you know, big, cumbersome headpiece and all, and just rips it off her. I think this is the first time that we've actually seen Hela without her cape and without her cowl.
In the name of my father, never again shall Thor be slave to any creature. Sooner I would die 1,000 deaths. And
she's going, "Arg, you wretch, my cloak, give me back my cloak." And her form is shifting, and he sees that half of her body is dead and is a corpse. Like Snorri says in the myths, that half of her is dead and half of her is alive. Of course, Snorri said that her top half was alive and the bottom half was dead, but Simonson has obviously split her right and left half, so her left half is dead and her right half is alive. And she has like Annie Lennox hair, except it's gray. It's like kind of like a buzz cut. Like,
Thor! Thor!
And Thor feels himself aging, and he looks like his boots are getting loose. It's funny how when superheroes age, they always turn into these like skinny scarecrows. Even like when Superboy got aged by something. I remember back, this was, you know, back in probably the 60s, one of the first Superboy comics I ever read. And she's like, anyway, I'm not going to talk about Superboy. This is not a Superboy podcast. And Thor says, stay where you are, Hela.
Thor!
For now I understand. You are the ruler here, but also the servant. And this cloak is your key. Without it, you are trapped here like your subjects. Ironic, is it not? That I, who have destroyed mountains and leveled great cities, can barely muster the strength to tear a scrap of cloth. But I will destroy it, Hela, if you do not abide by our bargain. Is the match over? Well, death. And he begins to rip Hela's cape. She gets really alarmed. Stop!
The match is yours. The bargain stands.
And Thor is pretty much back to normal at this point. And he's like,
well said. Already I feel my youth returning. Have your servants prepare the mortals' souls for their departure from this desolate realm. Baldur, see to it.
At once, Thor.
And though we have saved the mortals, I am heartsick, for I have not found my father.
And Nanna comes up to Thor and says,
Thor, his face, Hela has destroyed it.
What do you want, Nanna? You have betrayed the god who once loved you.
We are all Hela's slaves, Thor, and must do her bidding. I would not have shown myself to Baldur had she not commanded it, for well I know that if he thought I still loved him, he would not leave me here, but die the real death to remain beside me. I could not forgive myself were I to rob the world of his light, and I cannot leave here. Now he thinks me something corrupted beyond redemption, and will return to his place in the sun. That thought, and the knowledge that you know the truth, will sustain me here.
And Nanna goes wandering off.
No.
Leave me, Thor, while I am still resolved, but promise me never to tell another what I have told you. Promise.
And Thor promises, and she goes wandering off, and he's thinking to himself, so this is how it ends. Sif, if we live to see again the halls of Asgard, I will beg thy forgiveness. For in my pride, I wouldn't have taken it only on my own terms. But now, whether you will forgive me or not, I walk with a lighter heart, knowing that a love like this can exist beyond death.
And really, we haven't seen Thor's face since Hela touched it, but we kind of get a glimpse that, you know, something is not quite right with his face. Like, it's kind of scarred now. And his face is in shadows or hidden in every panel.
Perhaps in time, I too might be worthy of such a perfect love.
And Baldur has been talking to him, apparently, and it's just, Thor, did you hear me? We're ready to depart. And Baldur sees Thor's face, and
by the eye of Odin, Thor's face.
What of your wounds?
They are as nothing compared to those that others must bear. I will bind them in the remnants of my cape for now. Lead on, brave Baldur. Let the bargain be complete. The cloak is Hela's once more.
And he tosses the cape aside as the warriors ride off back towards Asgard. And we see Hela reaching down to pick up the cape and thinking to herself,
and this victory is mine, Thor. But think not to tell me the tale of your triumph in the mead halls of the Golden Realm. For the road from Hel is more dangerous than you could know. And in the end, Hela shall hold everything in her hands.
And we have next issue blurb, next, the Day of Wrath. So, yeah, it was easy for Thor and the Einherjar to go into hell, but next issue we're going to find out just how hard it is to get out of hell again. And that is Thor number 361. Yeah, cool issue. And again, yeah, it was a pretty awesome issue just to wrap up a dangling plot thread from, what, 20 issues ago? I mean, it's been quite a while since that storyline. If you remember, he's going to save the souls of the mortals who ate the fairy food that Malekith was giving them. And then they ended up turning into that yellow powder. Do you remember? Anyway, so that goes that far back. And I guess that just shows that, you know, Walt Simonson is not forgetting these dangling plot lines. But anyway, this one's done. And they go riding off. And that is Thor number 361. So great issue. Art, a bit sketchier than normal, I have to say, but by and large, pretty good stuff. Story, very good. I think it's a great story. Makes a lot of sense. We get some resolution here with Thor and, you know, maybe his feelings towards what happened between him and Sif. Even though, you know, Thor was being controlled, remember, by Melody / Lorelei when he hit Sif and is decided finally now that he needs to humble himself to get Sif's forgiveness. And it's interesting. I like the fact that they threw Nanna in here because Nanna, of course, being, according to mythology, is Baldur's wife. And I don't remember any stories about Nanna dying in the myths. But again, my knowledge of the myths is not exactly perfect. So I'm sure that Dave is out there thinking, you fool, it was this myth. Yeah. Anyway, the other really outstanding thing about this issue is that we actually get a really serious knockdown, drag-out fight between Thor and Hela. Hela has always been portrayed as this rather intimidating character, and here we really get to see the two of them battle. You know, back in the 60s, they could never do that because Hela being a woman, and, you know, that was taboo in comics. You didn't have men hitting women. And, you know, and of course, I can't remember any other time. You know, maybe he pushed her over or something, but I don't remember any kind of a knockdown drag out like this one. Of course, I could be completely wrong because I don't remember every single Thor issue. All right, so gonna wrap it up now. Thanks very much for listening. And next episode, once again, will be Radio Free Asgard 54. We will have one of the Norse myths. Which one? I don't even know yet. I haven't decided. And there's a number of possibilities, but that will be next time. So thanks very much for listening. Once again, if you want to email the show, you can do so. The email address of the show is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. So from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard.